good afternoon to you, Namibia, and welcome to On The Reader News Analysis. I'm your host, Dafa Happy Juju, and I shall be keeping you company up until 14:30, bringing you the stories, insights, and conversations that matter most this Monday afternoon. Now, of course, it's Monday, the 6th of October, 2025, and the start of a fresh week and a new chapter in our journey through this month. Now, October often feels like a bridge, a time to reflect on what we have achieved so far and to set our sights on what's still ahead before the year draws to a close. So if you have been waiting for a push to refocus, reset, or take that leap, maybe today is that moment. Now, right here on the Reader News Analysis, we don't just give you the headlines. We dive deeper, exploring the why, unpacking the how, and connecting the stories to you, the people shaping Namibia every single day. And remember, your voice is part of this conversation. So make sure you dial in on 083-288-401 so that you can air opinions and contributions right here on the Reader News Analysis. Ensure that you reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or WhatsApp, and do stay tuned via the Eagle FM app or Eagle FM website. Now, of course, we do want to hear from you and hear your perspective as it helps us shape the conversation. Now, from the windspread dunes of Vavas Bay to the bustling streets of Windhoek, from the quiet corners of the Caprivi to the rolling landscapes of the Konene, wherever you are this Monday afternoon, thank you for making Eagle FM your trusted companion. This is On The Reader News Analysis. Namibia stories explored, unpacked, and brought closer to the people who live them. Let's jump into these top stories. The city of Windhoek officially launched the International Fire Safety Week today, marking the beginning of a week-long campaign dedicated to promoting fire safety awareness and preparedness across the capital. Now, the event, which runs until October 10th, is being hosted at the City of Windhoek Fire Brigade headquarters. Now, joining us to talk about International Fire Safety Week is Sikongo Philippos, Senior Fire Safety Officer at the Windhoek, at the City of Windhoek. Let's take a listen. A very good afternoon to you, Sikongo Philippos, and welcome to On The Reader News Analysis.
Good afternoon to the listeners, and thank you for having me.
Now, Sikongo Philippos, of course, this week marks the beginning of International Fire Safety Week. Now, just why is fire safety awareness and preparedness across not just the capital city of Namibia, but across the world and across so many places very important and crucial? Because, I mean, we understand that human lives are always dealing with fire every now and then. So why is fire safety very important?
Okay, so we have to start off by understanding that fire is one of the most common hazards that is everywhere. It's prevalent in every condition that you can find yourself, even in a water treatment plant. As much as we know that water extinguishes fire, but fire can be can happen in that specific place. Therefore, the International Fire Safety Week emanates from an event that happened, I think, in 1875. That's many moons ago in Chicago, where there was a big fire that ravaged through the township, as well as now it burned through structures, killed a number of people, and burned a big number of grazing land. And when they looked at containing this fire, they tried to get all their national resources together, but they saw that bringing all these resources was actually more costly than what they would have done if they prevented it. Therefore, it was then declared that this specific week, which is the second week of October, starting from 1915, has been commemorated. And if you look on each and every calendar of awareness and safety or prevention awareness campaigns, you will see that this is one of the longest awareness sessions or events on every calendar, because you will celebrate each of those events on a single day, but this has been dedicated the entire week, which is the first Sunday, the second Sunday of October, which is in the second week, up to the Friday.
I see. Now, of course, what are those basic safety or basic hazards that any person should actually know about, and in order for them, in case a fire actually happens, whether it's in their own home or perhaps at the neighbor's house, what are those particular things that they ought to know so that they can be on the safe side should any incident happen?
Okay, it's not to say you need to know A, B, C, D, but the first thing one needs to understand is that fire is fire. and fire can be very devastating.
Mm-hmm.
So fire starts because of certain elements that come together. And in this case, we usually look at what we call the fire triangle, which is now your fuel, not petrol and diesel only, but anything that is going to burn. It can be a cloth, grass, anything and everything that will burn is a fuel. And then you look at the oxygen or the air, which we breathe. That's why we are alive, and that's why we are on Earth, because there is oxygen everywhere. So the scientists say that it only requires 16% of oxygen to support burning. And we already know that the atmosphere has 21%. So meaning the entire globe can burn down.
Yeah.
The only thing that is required is only an ignition source. And most of these ignition sources are human activities. They come from electrical appliances that we wrongly use. As much as they've installed something, people want to bypass, do illegal electrical connection. Even during worshipping, where we light candles or we use candles for lighting on a day-to-day basis. And then the most important one, which is now cooking and just having open fires, whether for your braai or for heating. So these are the most common things that usually come or starts fires. So the only way we can prevent fire is learning to handle it with care and not handling it negligently. If an equipment has been marked to handle such or certain voltages, it must remain that and do not bypass it. And when you are cooking, don't leave a pot or don't leave a fire unattended, because it only requires one little spark to burn down an entire nation.
I hear you. Now, Philippus, kindly educate us on the biggest fire risks currently facing households and businesses in Windhoek.
Okay, so the biggest of them all is what we term housekeeping. So when we speak about housekeeping, it's how you arrange your furniture, how you arrange your things in the building. So most of the times people don't understand that this specific structure has gone through an engineering process where you have possibly designed it to have two doors or exit doors, to have certain signages, to have certain fire equipment. But then we neglect keeping these areas clean. We stack our furniture, or we stack the business guys, they stack their stock up to the ceiling and up to the lights and all that. So the housekeeping is the biggest concern. And in terms of enforcement from the authority, if I have to speak with regards to the city of Windhoek, we would then go out and enforce. But the moment the enforcers leave, then these people revert back, because they think, because they've not suffered a fire before, they are not going to suffer a fire anytime soon. But we believe that a fire doesn't make an appointment. It can happen to anyone, and it can cost you your life. It can cost you your business. Yes, you can have insurance, but insurance only covers certain things. And as much as in our theme we are saying unite, we are also then speaking to insurance companies that they need to come in and do some penalties to those people that are carelessly putting lives at risk through this now housekeeping that is not up to standard or not following fire standards.
Mm-hmm.
And in the long run, one will then say enforcement and fire safety and prevention will go hand in hand, and the insurance companies have to come on board as well.
Now, in case of a fire emergency, what are some of the key steps residents should know and follow? And what are also some of those common maybe mistakes that residents do that they ought not to do?
Okay, thank you. The biggest mistake that residents make is that to think that any fire is just fire. But fire scientists, or in fire science and engineering, the fire has been classified in different categories, such as your class A, B, C, and D. And fire, maybe we'll have a conversation around what that refers to. But we need to understand that fire is not just fire, and therefore it must not be extinguished with anything that is available, such as using water. So the biggest mistake people usually make is that there is oil that is burning in a pot and you put water on. And we know that oil and water does not mix.
Exactly.
And this just makes the fire grow bigger. And only then do you run out and you attempt to call the emergency services. The moment your pot is on fire, you need to alert the fire department. Like within Windhoek, we say always call us on 061-241-111. And then the earlier you call us, the sooner we get there. Because if you attempt and only call us after you have failed, then you have delayed our response time. We have challenges on the road with regards to other motor road users.
Mm-hmm.
We have challenges with a lot of constructions, upgrading roads in and around Windhoek, that we will not be having traffic flow as easy as we would want to have it. As much as, yes, we put on our warning lights and all that, it becomes a challenge. Therefore, the first thing is get out of the building, assist those that cannot assist themselves, such as children, and then call the emergency services. And if the smoke is too much, always stay low, because smoke always go up so that you can have visibility on the floor. And to add to that, if you accidentally get your clothes catching fire, the most important element is to not run. Always stop, drop, and roll. That is what we teach our children every single day.
Stop, drop, and roll.
Yes.
Okay. Just, Philippus, just how prepared is the city of Windhoek for large-scale fire incidents? I mean, just recently we've heard about the Etosha National Park. Some amount of their hectares was actually burnt down. Now, that could have obviously been contained, but now here in the capital city, just how prepared are we for a large-scale fire incident?
Okay. So, if I just have to highlight to the listeners that we have different categories of fires, such as your structural fires and your felt fires.
Mm.
So when it comes to structural fires, we are more than prepared because we already start with the engineering process from township development to the engineering processes and systems in the building. Therefore, we are very much confident that we will be able to handle any magnitude of structural fire. But however, when it comes to the felt fires, felt fires are one of the most difficult fires to handle because you are dealing with topography, with nature, technically, the weather condition, the grass and all that. So as much as we are very much prepared, the safety of our first responders should be put first before we can try to attempt to extinguish a felt fire that is very dangerous for us. So as much as we are prepared, we have created specifically this week, or we have decided to commemorate this week by trying to prevent fire outbreaks. So yes, we are very much prepared, but felt fires are not fires that one needs to play around with. And Namibia has it on record where lives were lost when people were trying to fight felt fires. Even from us as industry experts, it becomes very dangerous because you can't fight a felt fire in the middle of the night. You can't climb on top of a mountain and go fight a felt fire. So it becomes technically challenging. But fire safety, people can handle their fires properly, even when you are welding or stop throwing cigarette butts out. I think we are more than prepared to handle any sort of emergencies within the boundaries of the municipality, and also just assist those that can if they follow the right channels of request.
Mm. Now, a particular angle I want to touch on right now that I think would be very necessary for the residents out there is that some people obviously use gas to cook and others and to use it for other household stuff. Just in case of a gas, let's say, for instance, a gas, the smell of a gas that somebody, one of those residents actually detect, or then perhaps whereby you can see that the pot is on fire, then how would you say they should mitigate that situation? How do I go about it? Do they go closer to the gas to try and close it, or just how?
Okay, like I earlier articulated, to say the first thing when you see that there is a fire hazard or there is a risk, yes, liquefied petroleum gas can be a hazard in your homes, but the risk can be minimized if you have the right supplier supplying you with the right cylinders and the right liquefied petroleum gases. So the moment someone realizes that there is a risk with regards to fire, the first thing you need to do is to call the emergency services. So with the city, we have introduced a levy to be available for the community. So we don't want to tell the community, no, we don't have resources to come to you. We want to be available. That is why the residents are paying for these services on a monthly basis. Therefore, the first thing is you call the emergency services on 061-211-111. And gas fires are very difficult to deal with. Avoid using your phone or anything that can ignite, such as radiation things, closer to that specific gas that you are suspecting to be leaking. And you can do a daily home test or a weekly home test where you take soapy water and just put it around your cylinder to make sure that there is no leakages. Because by the time you smell the gas, then you know the risk has magnified from a 50% to 100%. All you need is just an ignition. Mm. Your pot on fire, the same story. Inform the fire service first before you attempt anything.
Interesting. And lastly, in terms of story building, where you did speak, of course, that Namibia, the city of Windhoek is prepared for a large-scale fire incident. So in terms of apartments, a story building, whereby one is probably on the last floor or on the top floor, and there seems to be a fire somewhere in between there, just what would you caution those people on the last floor to do? They've already notified the authorities.
Okay, so yes, they've already notified the authority. Like I said, from our design, we encourage these developers that don't just look into making money out of the building, but look at a holistic approach in terms of the welfare of the occupiers that are coming to occupy. So there will be staircases that are dedicated for emergency evacuation. So people would always be encouraged to go out through that staircase or down that staircase and go assemble at the assembly point. And in instances where they are not able to go out and they are trapped, we always then say, come as closer to the window as possible or go out, close the door and stand on the balcony, wave something that can indicate your visibility so that the emergency responders can come out. In terms of our standard operating procedures, where a life is in danger is that we are not there to extinguish a fire. We first do what we will call search and rescue. Mm. We would want to save that life first before the other team can commence with firefighting. So always just go to the balcony if you are trapped and remain steadfast. Always remain calm, because when you are calmer, you have a lot of things that you can do. Mm. But from a biblical point of view, they say God will not give you a battle you cannot handle.
Okay. Now, you didn't say anything about elevators. Shouldn't they use elevators when there's a fire?
You must never use an elevator in a fire incident, because an elevator is powered with electricity. And in case of a fire, the electricity is going to go off. And then you are going to be trapped in that elevator.
Okay.
So, yes, I'm not even going to speak about the fireman's lift, but do not use an elevator in case of a fire. So the new technology that has come in is, most of the elevators will go down to the bottom and remain open. Don't attempt to tamper with them to try and get yourself up or down.
Mm, very interesting. Sekongo Philippos, thank you so much for making time for us and educating us on safety in terms of when a fire does occur.
No, thank you very much for having me, and thank you to the listeners. Please, let's practice fire safety. It's everyone's responsibility, not just the fire service, and not only the media to give this information. Let's distribute all this information and disseminate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And there we had it from Sekongo Philippos. And let's now take a pause and take a trip to the marketplace for a commercial break. And we'll be back shortly with more news to interrogate. Stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Impa has to offer at an unbeatable price. Impa, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. The 10th African Competition and Economic Regulation, also known as ACER, week took place on the 2nd and the 3rd of October 2025 at the Hilton Hotel in Windhoek. It brought together leading practitioners, regulators and academics from across the continent. Now, the annual event served as a premier platform for dialogue and knowledge sharing in the fields of competition law, economic regulation and policy implementation. Joining us to speak Joining us now to speak on the outcome of this conference and the importance of regulation is Dina Coases, Corporate Communications Practitioner at the Namibia Competition Commission. A very good afternoon to you, ma'am, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, Happy. Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
Thank you so much. Now, tell us more about the 10th African Competition and Economic Regulation Conference that just took place last week.
Yes, the 10th, let me just shorten it there because you've already said it out. The 10th ACER week is actually a week or an event that is co-hosted by the Competition and Regulation, Competition Enforcement and Regulation Department mm-hmm. of the School of Economics within the Johannesburg University. They call it CCRED, that's what the department is called. So what they usually do is they rotate the hosting of the event with other competition regulators. It started way back in 2015 in March in Zimbabwe. That's where it kicked off first. It is a component of professional training programs that looks at competition law and competition practice. Competition law practice and competition economics, actually.
Mm-hmm.
These are not just mere attendance training programs. These are certified programs by the University of Johannesburg.
Mm.
So when you attend them, you are equipped with issues that relate to unilateral conduct, you know, all sorts of conduct behaviors that we see as anti-competitive. How do we measure, how do you assess through economics the behavior and its impact on the economy as well as the consumers. We look at the various types of mergers and acquisitions mm-hmm. and what procedures and processes are involved in that. So that training precedes the what we call the two-day conference of the ACER week. So we had that three-day training. We started on the 29th of September and ended on the 1st of October. In fact, this type of collaborations are not free of charge.
Mm.
So it is unfortunate that we because it is a collaboration, it requires payment of a certain fee to participate either in the training programs or be part of the conference. Now, we resort under the Ministry of Mines and Energy.
Yeah.
And therefore, the conference that took place on the 2nd of October was officiated by our Deputy Minister, Honorable Gaudencia Crone, where she emphasized the importance of competition regulation and the importance of enhancing human capacity through efforts like this. Now, if we speak on competition importance, the regulation thereof, is when you do not have competition, when you don't have competing firms
mm.
within the economic space, that basically is tantamount to creating environments that are conducive for monopolies, environments that are conducive for collusion, where companies come together and decide on which areas of the market they are going to allocate each other. It creates issues of entries to barriers of entries where if I'm a new entrant and I also want to probably sell a bottle of water, mm-hmm. I'm not having that space because either the supplier is not willing to supply to me or the manufacturer is not willing to supply to me. And because there's a geographical allocation even with regard to whether it's in Oshakati, in Windhoek, in Rehoboth, certain companies will say, you take that market, I take this market.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it does not enable any other person to penetrate that market and also operate the same. So our mandate as competition regulation authorities all over the world is to ensure that there is competition, there are competitive industries within, whether it's in the same sector or whether it's in parallel to each other, that ensure that the market space is open for anyone to operate. Because ultimately, when there is no competition at the end of the day, us as a consumer suffer. Mm-hmm. Because if we only have this one supplier, that tells you this is where you get, as a retailer, you get your products and you sell them. Unfortunately for the rest of us, whatever price that supplier puts on and whatever price that specific retailer puts on is what we are going to be subjected to. Mm-hmm. Now, you should look already at the economy of scales and with regard to employment as well. You should take into account that we are battling with employment rate issues. And also with regard to the social standing, due to historical problems, that challenges that arose because of the system that we emerged from as an independent country, these things are impacting. So our mandate is basically to ensure that the market space is open for anyone to operate. The market space is open to ensure that consumers have that choice to go and buy. If they want to buy a spare tire, mm-hmm. they should be able to buy it from anyone. We do not want an issue where, even if you are in Sokopmund and you saw an opportunity in Windhoek where that spare tire is way, way cheaper, even if you cost your travel cost and all that inclusive, but then you see that now I'm going to make more and I'm going to spend less if I go and buy in Windhoek. The Windhoek supplier should not tell you, whether you are a retailer or just a customer, to say that now I've got this other shop over there, mm-hmm. there's Motor Space or whichever shop there, I wouldn't want you who is coming from Sokopmund to buy that product here from me. You need to go back and buy that product there. Mm. So we are trying to ensure that the space is open, you know. We have this saying where we say the small and medium enterprises are the backbone of any economy. Mm-hmm. What we do not further say with regard to that statement is to say that any business that we see today is well established, started off there. They were small businesses. They were even micro businesses before they became big entities. It is because they were allowed that conducive environment to operate within that market space. They were allowed to negotiate wherever they wanted to negotiate, because we also look at exclusive agreements. Our mandate says that we need to safeguard also the small and medium and previously disadvantaged sectors. That is basically what it means when we say we look at exclusive agreements as well. Within that scope, you may be able to purchase your product from somebody else. But then within that agreement that you have, there might be a clause that says, this product that you are purchasing from me, you are only going to procure from me. Whether I have seen another place where there's a promotion where I can get 2-for-1, I'm not allowed to go because of that exclusive agreement. And those are the types of things that we are supposed to deter and ensure they do not exist within the market space. What do we do with regard to consumers? What is it? What benefit is it for them?
Yeah.
Besides giving them the wide choice of going wherever they want to go to buy.
Mm.
It is also for them. When we have mergers and acquisitions, you know, the reason why we look at these entities and the reason why they need to notify the commission before they even merge or implement their acquisition is because we need to look at employment firstly. Mm-hmm. We need to look at how it's going to impact the people that were working within those entities. Are they going to be fired?
Yeah.
Are they going to be retrained? And then we look secondly at the existing agreements. They might have been small and medium enterprises that were supplying certain products for this company to produce whatever it is that they are producing. Are those agreements going to exist? As long as they do not seem exclusive to say you are only going to buy from me. But of course, we have instances where I'm probably the supplier of steel, some sort of steel to some company. That agreement is going to go on so that me as a small business owner is still going to be able to sustain myself within that market, and that this merger acquisition does not impact the way I have to grow, and therefore probably at the end of the day, I'm going to have to close shop. So we look at those type of things. For the consumer, what we say is when you enter, you know, whether it's a supplier space or the retail space, and you go into certain of places of these economic sectors, and then you observe that maybe the price for that bottled water, the same type of bottled water, you find it in one shop, it is $10 Namibian dollars. In the other shop, it is somewhere around 12. The next one is 15. But then there's this particular shop where that water bottle, the same water bottle, is costing probably 200. Then we would want the customers to come to us and say, there is this thing that I've observed. Is there merit for them to sell at that price? Because they might be supplying a certain market there.
Yeah.
Which only has access to them, you know, like a small village or something like that. And so then we need to, we're going to have to send our analysts to go and find out what is causing their specific price in that specific area to be at that excessive pricing rate, whilst all the others within that area or within that sector is selling it almost closer to each other or to a fair extent, at a fair price. So we don't necessarily say that if there's an excessive pricing somewhere, there is a contravention, because there might be factors that impact the way people price their products. So that is what we investigate to see, are you just trying to make a quick buck, or is it because there are factors that are impacting the sale of your product that requires you to sell it at that particular price. It is the same with when we say monopoly, we speak about dominance or abuse of dominance. And the dominance itself is not an issue. It is what you do with that power when you are a monopoly, or when you are dominant in a certain sector. What do you do with that power? The way in which you set your prices, the way in which you decide who to sell to and who not to sell to, that is what we look at when we speak of monopolies and dominance. You should recall that we had prohibited the sale of Orongo cement to Whale Rock. Those ones are the Orongo cement issue in Namibia.
And
those two that you were there, you captured that as well. We prohibited that, not necessarily because it was a bad thing, but then it was going to not create a competition space for any other cement operator, because Whale Rock and Orongo Cement are major players. So when these two companies come together, what situation do you have? You have a situation where
consumers are only having one supplier.
Exactly. And when you have one supplier, as much as we can promise ourselves that now they are going to conduct themselves beautifully towards the market, towards the consumers, issues are going to arise at the end of the day, because they have the market power, and they know that, you know, construction is the backbone, actually, of whatever we want to do. If we want to create infrastructure, we need that cement. We need all the products that go together with that. And now if it's only one service provider doing that, it becomes an issue at the end of the day, whereby the service provider is going to say, I'm selling this cement back to you for $400. This 10 kg cement bag, you are just going to have to buy it. Where do you go? So those are the areas, the type of things that we look at. And therefore, the ASA Week being a very important advocacy mechanism that we had used. This is not the first time that we collaborate. Last year, we had the institutional partnership, which was with regard to the Bundeskartellamt, which is a competition federal authority in Germany. And it was the same type of thing, because they offered Now, this one was a collaboration between our two governments some time back, before in the formative years, and then going towards the operationalization of the commission. And it culminated in training, enhancing the capacity of the Namibian Competition Commission, because these are well-established competition authorities. Same we did with the South African Competition Commission, which is actually a major partner and one of those major players that were there in the formative years of the commission. And our act is in fact premised on the Competition Act of the South African Competition Act. So these are the collaborative efforts. It is what we call advocacy drives that we take on. It's not only public consultation. We also want to enhance the capacity.
Mm.
And the Deputy Minister, Honorable Krone, has made it very clear that the government is supportive of these initiatives. It is supportive of the mandate of the commission. It is supportive of how we implement that mandate, and that it wants to ensure that we are capacitated in any form and manner that will ensure that we fully implement the mandate of the commission. So ASA Week is one of those collaborative efforts, and it is not only meant for, you know, the lawyers, the professionals in economics and so on. We also were looking at people who are really interested in finding out what is this competition law all about? What are they doing? Why are they existing?
Mm.
So this was capacitating those people that are interested also, so that they have a fair idea. Companies were there.
Mm-hmm.
Our private sector was there, represented also in the training, so that they understand when they engage with us, what is it that the commission is looking at? What are the do's and don'ts of the Competition Regulation Act and the enforcement thereof? So it was quite interactive. The experts that we had were leading experts in the competition and economic space. So I myself feel so capacitated that I also now want to change gear and probably enter the legal fraternity and become one of the lawyers, because that is how interesting and informative the sessions were. Because during the conference, there was, of course, the main, the formal session where we opened the conference. But the events that the activities that that then followed after the formal opening of that conference preceding the training is that we also had panel discussions on various issues, ranging from how do we regulate certain aspects. Now we have new technologies coming into the space. We also are now having the hype of green hydrogen in Namibia. We are looking at the oil sector. We are looking at artificial intelligence. Mm. All these technological advances and new scopes of sectors that are entering in, we need to find ways of how we can incorporate them in the competition law enforcement arena. So those were also the areas that we were discussing and deliberating on, and it was quite extensive deliberations that we had, because all panel discussions were interactive, questions were asked, because we had experts sitting in, not only from the Southern African region, we also had from international region. We had one professor from Hong Kong as well. He's well versed in the competition law. And we also had our own Namibian Competition Commission experts, our people that are running the engine right now of the competition law enforcement area in Namibia. So I would like to conclude with is just to say that whenever we make this type of calls, even if it's paid sometimes, we would really want our people to come in big numbers, acquaint yourself with the competition law. Even when we have public consultation meetings, which are free, and we do them through the regional council authorities, and also workshops and those type of things, where we call on our public to come and acquaint themselves with the competition law, because some things may look normal because we have normalized them, and we do not know that that type of conduct might be contravening the Competition Act, and is something that should not happen. If we are not knowledgeable, then unfortunately we are just going to let it go, and it will continue for years and years. So this is, yeah.
But before I let you go, just lastly on, talk to us about policy dialogue that was discussed perhaps on, in terms of cross-border cooperation and regional economic integration in terms of competition, obviously, regulation.
Yes. Yes, as you are aware, we enter into several memorandum of agreements or understandings with national, regional, and international competition authorities. These ones are actually geared at making sure that where there is concurrent jurisdiction, like we have CRAN as a sector regulator here, ECB as a sector regulator. Those sector regulators, we enter into memorandum of understanding or agreements where we ensure that this section that relates to, if some case is brought to one of us as sector regulators, if there is one aspect that relates to CRAN's authority as a sector regulator, we collaborate in that regard. Now, where it concerns the regional partners and the international partners, you know, most of the things that are, that the companies that we have here, the retailers, most of them come from South Africa. Their offices are based there, the head offices.
Yes, yes.
Now, when there's a merger or acquisition taking place or any change in the way they do their business, they first do that either internationally or in South Africa.
Okay.
Now, because these are concurrent jurisdictions, because they need to come to us as well, we collaborate on in that regard to see what informed the decisions that the other jurisdictions made on certain issues with regard to a certain measure. And but we do not rely on that only. We also look at what is it that the context within the Namibian Competition Commission, because we are operating in different spaces. This is Namibia, the other one is South Africa. The other one might be USA. So we look at, we take what they have been doing, but we look at it from the perspective of the Competition Commission space in Namibia. So we do collaborate. We also, when we have cases that we have to take, where we have to maybe ask for a review, where we have to take some of the cases to court because there's a contestation with regard to our determinations, we also collaborate with the law fraternity from outside, who are more well-versed in some of the aspects that they are speaking. You should recall that most of the authorities from, starting from South Africa to the international arena, have what they call a tribunal. A tribunal is specifically set up, it's a court that specifically deals with competition-related issues only. So that tribunal is the one that decides whether what the Competition Commission, whether it's in South Africa or in Singapore, has said holds water, or whether that they are going to take a different interpretation of that. And that space is very important because the ASA week is actually one of those areas where we look at policy issues as well to see what drives
whether
the policy.
Whether it needs any reform or it's okay the way it is.
Yes, and currently South Africa has amended its Competition Act quite several times.
Okay.
Equally the other jurisdictions as well. We also are in the process of amending. We have done that consultative process. We have given it over now to our leadership, which is now on the ministerial level, to have a look at the amendments that we are seeking to strengthen the mandate of the Commission, give us summoning powers, give us certain powers in certain, some of the areas that we need strengthening, where we identify and say this is where we need to strengthen the Competition Act in order to ensure that it is fully implemented So we have done that to have policy reforms. You know, the market studies that we are doing, what we call research, those are issues that inform policy reforms as well, not only in the competition space, but in our setup of our government in certain areas. If you recall, we had the infant industry protection program that is still on, but then at some time, the prices of our chicken breadbacks, our poultry, mm-hmm. especially the chicken breadbacks, became so excessive and expensive that we were all talking about maybe moving to pork or one of those mm-hmm. other meat products that we don't usually eat. Mm-hmm. And this is because the infant industry protection program was protecting the market to say that if a product can be acquired within the Namibian space, if they are producers, let us get the product from them. Mm. And then
prioritize local work.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then close off the import of products from other places. Now, because that issue arose where the prices became excessive, our ministry requested us, on behalf of the government, of course, whatever we do is supposed to relate to the wider scope of our governance mm-hmm. of the Namibian nation. So we were requested to do a market study to find out why has the price of the chicken increased to the level that it has increased. And we did that market study. We had given it over to the ministry, which was slowly now to inform the cabinet at large to say these are the reasons why. And so that they cannot look at areas of policy reform. What can they do as government to ensure that this situation does not continue, that there is some plan or some other alternative that they can use. So that those are the types of things that relate to policy. So it's not only with regard to collaboration with other jurisdictions or entering into MOUs or MOAs. Mm-hmm. It's also those type of areas where we say, how did the South African Commission amend its act? What were the areas that they looked at? We have also done that. It's still a long consultative process. So it's not a thing of it. So if it goes to the minister, then automatically it's going to go up to the upper chambers. It might come back to us with some questions, some queries, which we have to respond on and give some explanations or clarifications on. So we are in that space.
Okay. You know, Ms. Dina Kwaga says, am I saying it right? Kwasis.
Yes. Okay. Kwasis. You are on
set. Thank you so much. You know, I really appreciate this conversation. It's been a long time coming. You know, I've told you that I would want you to bring you on so you can come and tell us what actually, the Namibia Competition Commission is all about and what you regulate.
Yeah.
But this is very informative as to understand how it works and that as the consumers also, we have our part to play, you know, whereby mm-hmm. we see something that is exaggerated. The price is highly, exaggerated. Then I can also come in and say, alert the Namibia Competition Commission to say, you know what? They are charging extremely bogus amounts for this particular mm-hmm. cold drink in this particular shop. So I really do appreciate you making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis just to educate us on those matters.
Yeah, happy. And if I could just add one important point is okay. that when I spoke about we go to High Court and so on, we are having an ongoing case
mm-hmm.
Where we were investigating the conduct of pharmacies, mm-hmm. over 200 pharmacies in Namibia.
Yeah.
There was a complaint laid to us with regard to excessive pricing and some sort of collusive conduct where these pharmacies might have come together and decided to set prices for okay. certain products.
Mm-hmm.
We had conducted our investigation with regard to that. And we found that there was a contravention. A couple of the pharmacies did actually say that, yes, we contravened, and they like to say inadvertently contravened, which means it was not an intention to contravene, but it so happened that the conduct is there.
Mm.
So, but that in itself, it's a form of saying, yes, we are guilty of this conduct. And they said it's okay. They settled a fine and also a program that says they have to cease the conduct. But then there are others within that group that decided they aren't happy with our determination. And therefore they went to the High Court. And the High Court ruled in their favor to say that no, they are fine the way they are operating and whatever conduct they are doing. So on the 20th of November, come next month, we are going to be in the Supreme Court of Namibia because we have requested for a review of the High Court's decision. So that review is going to take place on the 20th of November because we still feel that there is an issue. Because at the end of the day, if you and me cannot afford to buy medication, even if you have a medical aid, and what you have to pay extra on top of that, that excess fee that you have to pay, if it's not sustainable because of the pricing of certain products, it hampers our health. Health is very important. Without health, I don't think any one of us can be productive. And that being the reason why the commission decided that, no, we are not going to let this go here at the High Court. We are going up to the Supreme Court level. So on the 20th of November, we are going to have that case in the Supreme Court with regard to the pharmacies and the commission now trying to iron it out there. So it will be very important for our public at large to know that, yes, we are not just there looking at big entities and just the
and letting them get away with what they're doing. We
are with the type of resources that we get, whether they are small or big. We do the best we can to ensure that the trust that the government has put in us to say that this is what you are going to lead and do, we meet that trust fully to say we are thankful for that confidence that you have in us and we're going to do our best.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. Even to understand that sometimes the suppliers themselves can be on the same par, but not necessarily in the right direction, but rather. Interesting. Ms. Tina Goaga says, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you so much, Happy, for having us and giving us a platform to speak to your audiences, because without you giving us that space, unfortunately, we will speak on paper and in courts, and then our people are not going to understand. And then one day we'll just hear this happened, but no one came.
That's true.
So we are thankful for you giving us this platform to say, please look out for this. This is what we are going to do, and this is what we don't want to happen. And so we are grateful. We always going to be, whenever you call to say we have this issue that we want you to clarify, we're always going to avail ourselves.
Okay. Thank you so much. Good day ahead.
Thank you, Happy. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
And there you had it from Dina Koaga says she's the corporate communications practitioner at the Namibian Competition Commission. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. I sure that hope that you have learned one or two things. And now, should you be interested in asking more questions or airing your opinions and contributions right here on the Reader News Analysis, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba. that brings together various hymn books under one app, here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, Rioshierero o Maimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing for Diara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatimwe bali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, egeleton, the eye.
Welcome back, and it's at this point that we take you to News Beyond the Borders. But before we cross into News Beyond the Borders itself, we'll tell you what's happening in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Now today, $1 is equals to $17.26. €1 is equals to $20.14. And £1 is equals to $23.18. $1 is equals to $11.39. £1 is equals to $21.63. And £1 is equals to $1.30. Now moving on to trading economics. The North Macedonia's trade deficit has widened significantly to $355.5 million in August 2025. That is from $250 million in the same month of the previous year. Now exports declined 3.6% year on year to $660.9 million, while imports rose by 8.5% to $1,016.5 million. Now for January to August period, the country's trade shortfall reached $2,509 million. Exports advanced by 4.3% compared to the same period a year earlier, totaling $5,867 million, mainly driven by higher sales of animal and vegetable oils, fats and waxes at plus 28.7%, beverages and tobacco at plus 28.6%, and machinery finished products at plus 16.4%. Meanwhile, imports increased faster at 5.3% to $8,377 million, primarily due to increased purchases of animal and vegetable oils, fats and waxes at plus 26.5%, and beverages and tobacco at plus 14.4%. Meanwhile, producer prices in Jordan have dropped by 0.75% year on year in August 2025. That is from a downwardly revised 0.59% decline in the previous month. Now, this marked the seventh consecutive period of producer deflation as manufacturing costs fell at minus 1.43% versus minus 1.11% in July. And that is mainly due to price drops in food products, refined petroleum, paper and paper products, and refined. Meanwhile, producer inflation in the mining and quarrying sector advanced by 9.63% from 6.71%. And on a monthly basis, producer prices fell by 0.46% in August, reversing a 0.49% rise in the preceding period. Now, new car sales rose 13.7% year on year in September 2025. That is UK new car sales, reaching 312,891 units at the strongest September performance since 2020. Growth was broad-based across all market segments, with fleets posting the largest increase, up 16.9% to 174,336 units. Private consumer demand rose 8.9% to 131,003 units, while business registrations jumped 28.6% to 7,552 units. Now, strong manufacturer investment and expanded model choices supported by new electric car grant drove a record of 72,779 new battery electric vehicle registrations, which is the highest monthly volume ever. Now, combined with hybrids, electrified vehicles now account for the majority of all new registrations. Overall, the market is up 4.2% year to date, with battery electric vehicles share climbing to 22.1% following the year's second biggest sales. And that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be now telling you what's making headline in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned with us right here on the Rear News Analysis.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0683. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kudite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanoa na Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatuimwe bali hea di nola natu. Heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you to news beyond the borders. We're starting off in South Africa, where South Africa is hosting the Hospital Association of South Africa annual conference, also known as HASA. Let's take a listen.
All right, let's take you back to one of our other stories that we're watching unfolding in Sandton at the Sour. That's where the Hospital Association of South Africa is hosting its annual conference under the theme Innovation and the Future of Healthcare Provision. The gathering brings together healthcare professionals, policymakers, and industry leaders to try and explore new technologies, policies, and partnerships that are shaping the country's health system. Watching that story for us is SABC News reporter Katlego Lohodi, who is joining us now live from Sandton. And Katlego, I'm not sure if you're able to hear us. If you are,
no.
I'm sure there are a number of stakeholders who have been heard at that particular gathering. Help us place what kind of discussions are taking place and what the possible outcomes of this gathering will be.
Well, let's take...
A very good morning to you once again, Ayanda. Welcome back to the Santen Convention Center. This is where we see those high-level conversations continuing this morning, well into the afternoon, giving us a sense of where we find ourselves as a country to date in the provision of healthcare, adequate healthcare. So HASA, the Hospital Associations of South Africa, is actually 17 years old. And Ayanda, they've been doing this work year in, year out, gathering think tanks within this space to really just outline certain issues that they pick up on a daily in their area of work, but also just try by all means to prepare the future of the country where healthcare provision is concerned. So various of those conversations already coming under the spotlight, the NHI, where we find ourselves today in terms of the implementation, the rollout. There is a litigation in place around that from HASA to the government. At the same time, we know very well that there's an issue around funding. There's an issue of infrastructure development and a lot of issues that would speak to where we find ourselves. How do we harness technology, for instance, in ensuring that we solve for the country's healthcare sector? The person that is well vested with all of these things that I was speaking to you on now would be Melanie Da Costa. Melanie joining us this morning as the chairperson, the chairman of HASA. And here we see you gathering various of these role players once again in the year 2025 to thresh out various of these issues. Maybe let's start by just reflecting on the work of HASA. For those that don't know this organization, let's reflect on what you guys do, Melanie, and how we find you gathering these role players here today.
Thanks, Katlego, and I appreciate the opportunity to engage with you. So HASA really works on policy matters. It's an association that represents private hospital groups, and obviously within the hospital groups are also all of the constituents that we represent, all of the independent healthcare practitioners. So we engage over time with policymakers from the Department of Health to all the various regulators. And we engage obviously across the health spectrum, medical schemes, doctor groupings, on how it is that we inform sustainable healthcare policy. And what you find in a conference like this is we continue to engage on how it is that we create sustainable healthcare systems.
So let's just then get a sense of how then we are hoping to achieve all of these things with the role players that are getting are here today, looking at various of these issues that I outlined as well. 17 years of the work of HASA, what are some of those issues that you've been picking up that even to date worry you?
So what this conference is normally about, that the agenda of the HASA conference is normally quite robust in terms of health policy. And what that implies is that we're pretty dependent on the regulator to ensure sustainability of healthcare. And we've taken a slightly different approach this year. In this year's agenda, you'll see that we've actually introduced a significant element of technological disruption. And what that tells you is we're saying that we actually believe increasingly that the improvements and the dislocations that are coming in healthcare that will improve access and equity in healthcare maybe is not dependent on the regulator. Maybe it's increasingly in our gift because of the innovations that we're seeing as a result of AI, genomic sequencing, wearables, robotics. So we're seeing significant improvements in access to healthcare that weren't around 5 years ago. And we introducing those topics today at the HASA conference.
Who do we have here in terms of various of these role players? I know earlier on you had the MEC for agriculture here in Gauteng, MEC Ramokopa, but I see that there are various of the CEOs of various of these hospitals that are here today.
Yeah, so we have a very diverse grouping of people. You wouldn't normally expect to see the MEC for Agriculture in the audience, but she actually speaks to health policy and what informs good health policy. So we're actually open to very diverse voices. Yes, you do see CEOs of hospital groups. You also see that the Ombudsman for Healthcare is in the room. You see medical schemes in the room. You see CEOs of hospitals themselves, as well as public hospitals, private and public hospitals. You see actuarial firms. You see a broad range of players all trying to inform healthcare. There's a lot of players from the nursing environment, a lot of players from allied health, So yes, a very diverse group of individuals here.
Meanwhile, SAPS, that is South African Police Higher Education Department, has launched forums in order to combat rampant campus crime. Let's take a listen.
Crime at campuses continue to pose a serious threat to the safety, security and academic successes of students, where female students in particular have been raped and others murdered. To respond to this, SAPS, in collaboration with Higher Education Department, are officially launching community campus safety forums as an effective strategy to combat this. Now, on this story for us, we've got SABC News reporter Mbalentle Mthethwa. Mbalentle, talk to us about this story. Good morning.
Well, certainly, I am at the TUT campus where the launch will be taking place, led by the South African Police Service. And indeed, statistics do show that crime on campuses around the country is quite high, and a chief among those crime or types of crime that are really at reported quite frequently are those of theft and burglary. Now, you will know that students usually are targeted by criminals who want to steal laptops as well as cell phones from those particular individuals, and the open nature of universities has made it easier for people to come in and out of campuses for the intents and purposes of robbing and stealing from students and targeting students in particular. That is not the only place where students are also victims of crimes, but they also fall victim to crime when they leave the campus. So it's really one of those really those problems that have not really received the attention that, you know, it really deserves. I mean, even sexual assault is also one of those issues that has been raised quite frequently on campuses. And you will remember that in the Eastern Cape, at the Rhodes University, there was once a very well publicized protest by students who were complaining about the high rate at which sexual assault was taking place on the campus. So this is also one of the issues that is mostly feared by students, being sexually assaulted while walking around, going to class or moving from the residence to the respective classes. So those are some of the challenges that we are hoping to speak to those who are going to be here launching this much needed initiative that will ascertain or at least try to protect young people who are still in the process of attaining their undergraduate or postgraduate degrees, and in the hopes that they are able to secure themselves a bright future. And they need to be able to do so in a safe environment. For now, it's back to you in studio.
Certainly, a big issue there. Mbalentle, thank you.
And lastly, in South Africa, 5 top investigators are in France to probe the ambassador's, South Africa's ambassador's death.
The French capital. The hotel in the French capital where South African ambassador Nathi Mthethwa was found dead. The 58-year-old's body was discovered in the Hyatt Regency's inner courtyard on Tuesday morning after falling from the 22nd floor. National Police Commissioner Fani Massimola says 5 seasoned police officers will work with French investigators in Paris to support a thorough and transparent inquest. Mthethwa was reported missing by his wife on Monday. While concerns have been raised about possible foul play, initial investigations suggest his death may have been a deliberate act. Mthethwa served in various capacities during his lifetime, but his career was not without controversy, and he was entangled in probes by several commissions. As police minister, he presided over one of the country's darkest democratic moments, the 2012 Marikana massacre, when 34 striking miners were gunned down by the police. And just 2 weeks before his passing, Mthethwa was implicated in explosive testimony before the commission probing political interference in policing.
Meanwhile, in Zambia, Zambia's private sector growth has hit 6-year high.
Zambia's current economic performance apart, of course, the country just came out of one of the worst droughts in a century. We're now joined by Edwin Makuya. He's an international trade policy analyst. Mr. Makuya, great to have you, of course, with us on the show today. Now, of course, Zambia's economy, we're seeing it recording some of the best numbers in at least 2 years. That sort of signals that it has made a major recovery from that drought. Inflation is down, the kwacha has strengthened quite significantly, and also business confidence, as we just mentioned, or business conditions have improved at the fastest pace since 2018. What is your assessment on the economy, and of course, how vulnerable the economy is right now?
Thank you so much for having me on the program. As Elia indicated, we've seen that the economy has been showing some significant resilience coming from the drought and pulling through into 2024-2025, where we saw food prices being affected as a result of the drought that we had experienced. And, of course, being dependent on hydropower. So we also saw that because of that drought, there were elements of having low power and energy levels to boost the manufacturing and the mining industry. So this, we've seen that there's been some significant growth as observed that between 2021 and 2024, there's been some steady growth in terms of GDP of about 5.3. And the projected GDP growth for this year is about 5.8. So despite all these significant gains, we've seen that government has also put in a lot of fiscal discipline. And then they've also managed to bring investor confidence in the economy. And this has triggered more FDI flowing into Zambia, considering that Zambia is mining, mostly mining predominantly, but we've seen sectors like agriculture and ICT coming on board. Of course, we are not, there are also shocks that the economy is exposed to. As you may know, the copper prices currently are soaring, but that cannot last for a long time. So we also need to make sure that we diversify the economy to ensure that there is more resilience and to ensure that there is more continuation and stability.
Right. And of course, you mentioned the copper price there. And when we talk about the fundamentals that are driving this sort of positive trend we're seeing in Zambia, a lot of people point to the fact that we've seen copper prices soaring as a major factor. How much is this positive trend fueled by the rise in copper prices? If that's the case, is it sustainable? Are there other major fundamentals that Zambia can rely on?
Yes, so we see the copper price rising to about $11,000 per metric ton, which is a positive thing because currently Zambia is targeting to produce within 2025 about 1 million, to hit 1 million metric tons per annum in just 2025 in terms of copper output. And government has also set up an ambitious plan to increase copper output by 2031 up to 3,000 metric tons. So this is an ambitious plan, and government has put in place ensuring that there's a lot of investment flowing into the country. As this investment flows in the country, we ensure that we tackle the energy crisis and the issues that we have to diversify our energy mix, and then to also ensure that we are not totally dependent on copper, which is a major economic contributor to our growth. So currently, we saw, even in 2025, Q1, we saw that three major sectors contributed largely to the growth in 2025. So we talk of copper mining, and we talk of agriculture, and we see also ICT growth booming and coming as a result of us coming from the COVID situation. So that has really also seen as a sector that is booming and contributing to our growth. In terms of sustainability, yes, it may not be sustainable that the copper prices will still be at the price at which it is, but it's important that government considers diversifying the economy, especially the potential that we have in agriculture. You may be aware that we are doing much in terms of increasing production output, of right. which if the copper price is sustainable and continues to soar, that's going to put the country in the right trajectory, economic trajectory.
Meanwhile, analysts discuss a recent Al Shabaab attack, highlighting $150 million counter-terrorism funding gap.
Dr. Hassan Hanenje, director of the Horn International Institute for Strategic Studies, he started by explaining why the militants would attack the prison located very near the presidential palace.
First of all, they've been emboldened by recent success in the offensive they've been undertaking against government. And I think that has informed them to try and become even more audacious. Remember, it is important to understand some of the most experienced fighters are actually in prison right now. Now, this was also going to serve as a good propaganda tool with regard to the viability and resilience of Al-Shabaab, especially in the wake of the kind of losses they had suffered last year and in the wake of the new kind of successes they've been able to register in terms of undertaking extremely audacious attack against hard installations by the government. It's been a mixed bag. A better part of last year, the Somali National Army was able to register a lot of success, especially in central states of El Shabelle and Kalmaduk in Somalia. And unfortunately, I think that success was not exactly consolidated. And I think to the extent that there's reduced financing when it comes to the mission, as well as support to the Somali government, it has created gaps that actually is exploiting. And so what we have seen with regard to the recent Al-Shabaab attack is they are threatening to actually reverse the gains that have been made in the better part of the last 20 years. And I think these are worrying trend. It is important that the international community and those who have been supporting especially counterterrorism efforts in Somalia re-engage in a way in which, for instance, they need to refinance also. Today, the mission there is in the gap of about $150 million or so, which they actually require to be able to proceed following the absence of approval of continued funding by the United Nations, early in the year. Secondly, there is need to try and build institutions, especially political institutions, because this is also being exploited to delegitimize government in Mogadishu in ways that helps to swell the ranks of Al-Shabaab. And finally, it's going to be critical that, federal member states and the federal government are encouraged to coordinate, especially when it comes to efforts to contain not just Al-Shabaab, but also other related groups such as ISIS, as well as other extremist and Islamist groups in Somalia.
And now let's weigh in on Kenya's housing crisis that has forced thousands of families into the streets of Nairobi.
The streets or in informal shelters, this is the reality of Kenya's acute homelessness crisis. In Nairobi, poverty, forced displacement and limited access to affordable housing have left thousands with nowhere to go but the streets. The crisis affects everyone from adults to children. Joyce Mutoni is a mother of three. Her family ended up homeless after she lost her job. I have been living on the streets for 10 years and there are many challenges in the streets. For instance, it gets very cold at night. Most of the time we are hungry, the kids are crying. As if that is not enough, the police usually beat us at night. And it's not like we do not have a government. The 2018 National Census of Street Families found that more than 46,000 people were living on the streets in Kenya. Poverty remains the main root cause of homelessness. About 40% of Kenyans live below the national poverty line, according to the World Bank. Many are forced to live in informal settlement areas. One of them is Kibera in the south of Nairobi. I pay around 2,000 Kenyan shillings per month in this mud house, which is not even in good condition, and even the roof leaks. The landlord does not care and is very harsh with rent. If he says rent is due on the 5th and you fail to pay on time, he locks the door or even throws out your stuff. You are forced to work hard to pay for the house. A solution to the crisis is to build more affordable housing. The Kenyan government has constructed over 100,000 homes through its affordable housing program.
To deal with homelessness, I believe it should take a concerted effort of the government authorities to provide housing for the masses. But this could be done through social housing programs, whereby the costs are highly subsidized to enable these people buy into the houses.
According to the World Bank, Kenya has a housing deficit of 2 million homes. President William Ruto last month proposed the creation of a multilateral coalition to fight the global housing crisis.
Meanwhile, French government has quit just hours after being appointed.
France's new Prime Minister Sébastien Lecornu resigned on Monday, barely 14 hours after appointing his new cabinet. His swift resignation was unexpected and unprecedented, and marked another major deepening of France's political crisis.
La composition du gouvernement au sein du socle commun.
The composition of the government was not smooth and awakened some partisan appetites.
Appétit partisan.
Sometimes, quite legitimately, linked to the upcoming presidential election.
La future élection présidentielle.
The far-right National Rally immediately urged President Emmanuel Macron to call a snap parliamentary election. After weeks of consultations with political parties across the board, Lecornu, a close ally of Macron, had appointed his ministers on Sunday. But the new cabinet lineup had angered opponents and allies alike. They either found it too right-wing or not sufficiently so, raising questions on how long it could last. The resignation hit French stocks in early trade. Paris's CAC 40 dropped 2%, making it the worst-performing index in Europe. Banking shares came under heavy fire, leaving BNP Paribas, Société Générale and Crédit Agricole down 4-5%. The euro also slid 0.7% on the news. Le Cornu's resignation comes at a time when France is already mired deep in political crisis, with no group holding a majority and a fragmented parliament.
Several people have been killed in a hospital fire in India's Jaipur.
There was a short circuit in the trauma ICU, and due to the sudden fire, toxic gases spread into the ward. The trauma ICU has mostly critical patients, and our team, including the nursing officers, the ward boys and the trolley men, immediately rescued the patients. We brought as many patients out of the ICU as we could and moved them to another place.
President Duma Boko speaks on his plans to revive diamonds industry in Botswana.
We've been overly dependent on diamonds. We've taken a very heavy knock on that front. But we are also looking to diversify within the mining sector. Look at critical minerals, which we have plenty of. We have copper, nickel, we have cobalt. We have many other critical minerals, and we will be looking to leverage on our endowment in these regards to now begin industrialization, beneficiation, light manufacture, and processing of all these minerals so that we don't export them raw.
Has Botswana benefited from the Africa Free Trade Area in any way so far?
Well, it's still in its nascent stages, and Botswana is looking to benefit. That's why Botswana is reaching out, because in critical respects, there will be aggregation of produce in order to service certain markets which each country operating individually would not be able to service. That will unlock value. It will enable us to collaborate amongst ourselves as African countries.
On this matter of trade, if the Africa Growth and Opportunities Act, which allows duty-free access of certain African products to the U.S., is not renewed when it expires in the coming weeks, what does that mean for your country?
Well, it presents immense challenges because it will block off access to what has been a very huge market and a very lucrative market for African goods. We need to now be resilient enough. And if we are able amongst ourselves on the African continent to open these trade channels, that market that we would otherwise lose, we should be able to at least claw back a substantial part off from the African continent, the 1.5 billion.
Any sense on how many jobs could potentially be lost in your country if it's not renewed? What are your economists telling you?
For us, and the biggest commodity that accounts for trade between us and the United States is our diamonds. And that is why our focus has been to push for a zero tariff, especially on diamonds. But of course, we are pushing for a better deal on AGOA, not just for ourselves, but for the rest of Africa.
How far are your negotiations on zero tariffs for your diamonds?
Yeah, at an advanced stage. I think we are on the verge of reaching an agreement. And it looks like Botswana will probably be the first to conclude an agreement, and which will then be broadened to cover other African countries.
Speaking of agreements between African countries and the United States, what do you make of the third country deportations that the U.S. has been championing for? Many of your neighbors have signed up onto it.
There are certain concessions that African countries need from the U.S. And the U.S. is now presenting certain demands to these African countries and saying, in order for us to give you these that you are asking for, would you consider the following from our side? So it's something of a quid pro quo. You give me this in exchange for that. And a lot of the times the African countries have very little choice in the matter. And so strategically, one appreciates why some or many of them might, in the short to medium term, take the propositions that are given to them by the United States.
Have you been approached to receive migrants?
No, we have not. There's been no formal approach to us, but we've been talking about the tariffs. So maybe in the context of that, we might hear and we'll have to contend with.
What would your choice be off the top of your head? You are the ultimate. You're the CEO of the country.
We'll consider it when it comes. We'll do whatever is in the best interests of our country.
And there you had it from President Duma Boko of Botswana speaking on his plans to revive Botswana's diamond industry. Now, from Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. Let's do stay tuned for the Onko Nana Dingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi and the rest of the programs that are coming your way on this Monday afternoon. The business economic segment comes your way at 1800 hours. And the Home Run Show from 16:30 with Dwight and Helmut. Goodbye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Or the office number 083-288-400.
Eagle FM. Thank you. Input just got even better.
Eagle FM, 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 Eagle FM,
kara ang pasipareki uwi mo po yung mga programa dito. Moambo, dengira selma, onara hitatuy mo. Datu-datu, kaya di kamanon tano, o niyaj. Igan FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Omo dia utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo chikawa shafa sana na nalonge shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana I